Anyway, I'm not Brother Gregory. That's just there's several Gregory Williams floating around out there in the world. And in order to distinguish me from them, people started calling me Brother Gregory. And it kind of stuck. And so we keep doing that. Then somebody else comes along and he's called Brother Gregory too. So we're still confusing them. But that may come in handy someday if somebody's looking for me and I don't want to be found. So, but basically, I'm just Greg. Anyway, I have got a background real quick for some of you who may not know. I was born in Omaha, raised in Texas, went to the seminary in California at a very young age. Was disappointed with a lot of the things that I found, but I never disappointed in looking. I'm a question asker, which gets me in a lot of trouble. Eventually, I ended up doing what I always wanted to do, which is raise sheep out on the desert and train horses and raise my family. And one day I knelt down and asked God, I seemed like something was wrong in the world. And I asked him, whatever it is, I couldn't figure it out. You're going to have to tell me. And things started opening up right away. I mean, books showed up on my doorstep. People called me. People came out to my valley and started talking about different things. And pieces of the puzzle that I had never quite put together began to fit together. And 3 months later, I wrote the first chapter of the book, Covenants of the Gods. I took it to my father, who was a practicing attorney, a well-known attorney in many states, done international law, wrote law books. And I said, what do you think of that first chapter? And he took 3 hours to examine 12 pages, 5,000-word pamphlet, and asked one question in this process, and then came out, sat down next to me, and he said, you're right, but they're not going to like you. And so the journey began. So, and some people don't like me still today, but Jesus came preaching the kingdom of God is at hand, told us to do the same thing. So seeking the kingdom is at least part of the destination. We're in an infinite kingdom. I don't think we ever quite arrive. It'd get boring if it did, so we're always looking for something new. And I'm going to show you some things that are probably new to you. They're controversial. They're going to step on somebody's toes somewhere. I can't help but think that this group has been filtered out a little bit already. But we have done our homework. We have taken this to top attorneys in the United States. We've taken it to theologians. We've taken it to... I've been around for a long time, and I can't find anybody who can actually challenge us one-on-one. Anybody can walk away and convince themselves all by themselves that what I said was incorrect. But you can always win an argument if you're the only one that shows up. If you actually challenge me, I'll explain in greater and greater detail why we've come to these conclusions. And I'm not saying I'm always right. I'm always willing to look at what somebody else has in mind or what they are thinking and discuss it. I'm not interested in debating or proving anything. Personally, someone said that they read one of my articles on News and Views, and I think she said it spoke to her. I hear that all the time. I think it's because somebody else has been speaking to her that I've been listening to, and we have a common teacher. I'm really not going to teach you anything new other than facts and information, knowledge as it were, but you don't want to operate by the knowledge of good and evil. You want to operate by the Spirit that's speaking to you in your hearts and your minds. And you want to make sure that Spirit is of God. And there are ways to check that Spirit. And that's what the journey is kind of all about. In the world today, we hear about all kinds of problems. Certainly, you've heard about a few economic problems that have been on the... They're not actually not on the horizon anymore. They're actually right amongst you. There's problems with education. Scores are way down. Education's costing more. The children and the quality of the children that are coming out of public schools, not any of your children, I'm sure, but the other children... is not what it used to be. I'm a collector of school books. I've got a collection that goes all the way back to the 1800s. I got them really cheap because people were throwing them away. And fifth grade math book in 1945 required a higher degree of math skills than I see coming out of a lot of high schools today.
True.
The first 10 problems, I couldn't get high school students to solve them. They only get like one or two out of the problems, and they're all practical problems. So there's something going on. History books. You compare history books, history has changed. Since 1908, the history books you get, they're not what they used to say. They say something entirely different, and actually that was uncovered by the Reese Commission and exposed that there were people actually intentionally working on changing the Americans' view of history. If you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat the same mistakes. If you do know history, you can still make the same mistakes if you want, but at least you have a little bit of choice in the matter. Health, food we get wasn't too bad here today, but food you get, processed food in stores, GMOs, insecticides, all kinds of things. I mean, Americans' health is really going down. They need more and more doctors all the time, but there's a serious health problem, cancers, pandemic. A lot of these things, if you go back in history, they were around, but not like we see today. Diabetes, a lot of these things are the results of the kinds of foods that we have. Morality today, marriages break up at a drop of a hat. Many people, cessation of marriage is almost gone. We see a lot of other things in society that are we might consider immoral that have become rampant, accepted. You know, there's a movie, Blast from the Past, and about these people that are living underground in a bomb shelter, thought the end of the world took place. It's a comedy. But it shows the view of society. If you could go back and just suddenly appear in modern society, looking at the TV, what you see on the TV, you would be totally shocked. But because it's gradually changed, a lot of us have gotten used to it. This has happened before in history many, many times. I don't know if I'll get to all that. I'm going to try to move along. Governments aren't as responsive. They change certainly in nature from the early parts of American history. Why is all this taking place? Government is in charge of the economy pretty much, education, health, morality. Even the churches are incorporated. Something's wrong. There's problems. There's symptoms. People are always trying to solve the problem by treating the symptom. That's a common thing. That's really not going to give you the answer. We have a lot of preconceived notions that simply aren't true, and we keep trying to do the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, and there's things about that. This is a picture that's been on my wall for years and years and years. There's one sheep in here. All these are falling off a cliff. There's one sheep out there in the middle going the other way. Years ago, one of my grandsons, who's quite big now, but when he was little, he pointed to that and he said, "That's Grandpa." So, very politely saying, excuse me, I'm going the other way. I sure like other people to walk along with me. Church has been a big part of my life, but there's all kinds of churches. It's been a part of our heritage, but if you go back in history and look at what early American churches were doing and what churches today are doing, there's quite a bit of difference.
Huge.
You go back to the first century and take a look at what the churches were doing. There is an unbelievable difference. But anyway, they do all kinds of things in churches today. I'm going to question a lot of that stuff. Maybe you've already started questioning it. I'm not condemning any religion. I'm not condemning any church. You can't belong to His holy church. It's not what it's about. We want everybody to belong to Christ. We don't tell you to join us, but if you want to walk with us, that would be great. Whenever you want to stop walking with us, that's fine too. We have a pretty good idea where we're going. Churches in the past suddenly thought it was a good idea to crown kings over men. It all started really around 1066 in earnest. You saw it in Germany with Stefan and the Bullion, and this is William the Conqueror. and they started perpetrating an idea of divine right of kings. One of the things about that concept that government is tied to all these things, education, health, all these things, a question has to arise, who starts government? Churches have strange bedfellows at times. Churches also burn men at the stake for having a different opinion. Millions upon millions upon millions of people were killed because they had a different opinion of how to follow Christ. They burn them for all kinds of reasons, all kinds of ways. But it's the guy with the match, I can guarantee you, is the heretic. They might have burned some heretics, but the guy with the match, that's got to be a heretic, because that ain't Christ. So then even people who were persecuted and came to this country ended up hanging women because they actually thought that you had access to the Holy Spirit. You could actually have the truth written on your hearts and upon your minds, which is the prophecy of both Old and New Testament, that that's what God wants to do. He doesn't want to write it on my heart and then I scratch it on your heart. It has to speak to your heart. Jesus was very clear that we were not to be like the princes of the Gentiles who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other. And that exercising of authority certainly includes your thinking. You know, I'll challenge your thinking. I'll discuss things with you. It might even sometimes look like arguing. But really, if you change your opinion because I argued with you, you haven't got anywhere. You change your opinion because God is writing on your hearts and your minds. He's touching your conscience. Well, churches were all the way back. They used to call them temples. This is a replica of the temple of Herod. These were the priests and ministers. At least that's a picture of it. I wasn't trying to be flattering, obviously. They did all kinds of things too. But there was this guy, Jesus, who comes along and he had a message. And the problem is there's all kinds of pictures of what Jesus was talking about. We get all these different images of Jesus and people say he was doing this and doing that. You're ultimately going to have to determine what he was doing and what it means to you. But he came preaching this kingdom of heaven that was at hand. He told us to preach it was at hand. They knew he was a king when he was born. Other kings came to see him. Shepherds knew it. The king knew it. He had to hide so they didn't kill him. He comes into Jerusalem and they hail him as highest son of David. They call him the Christ. That means the anointed. Messiah means anointed. Messiah means anointed. All same word. David was anointed. So this is the highest son of David. This is the king. They throw down palm branches. If you study the history, when Hyrcanus came in, they threw palm branches down, but he wasn't as popular. Some people actually hit him with the palm branches, and he had him put to death. They said he had so many people put to death, there wasn't anybody left to say grace at the temple when they ate. But they were hailing him as king. It took 3 years before they caught on, but when he came into Jerusalem, they were hailing him as king. Of course, what were they doing in this temple? This temple was actually a government building because this is a theocracy. They were receiving funds. They were distributing funds. They weren't just preaching. This is where you went for your welfare, to the temple and to the synagogues. And they were supplied by the money. But here Jesus comes along, makes a string whip, and he drives the money changers out. And we get a picture drawn for us by the Renaissance and by preachers that somehow driving those money changers out, he was turning over the tables, and it got guys, you always see the change rolling and the tables flipping over. And these are pictures drawn from a few words in the Bible. But if you don't know the history, what those money changers were actually doing, what it meant to make a string whip and do this and chase these guys out. There's a guy with a string whip. He's got a string whip and a crook. I think that's Tut, which actually would be Toot. But anyway, the hook is you're hired. The string whip is you're fired. The kings were overseers for the government. They would appoint and unappoint people if they weren't doing the right job. Now, some governments, you elect somebody to do a job, but he still would have to appoint them. He would have to approve it, because if he disapproved of it, he could use the string whip and you're fired. You can't hold that office. And this is why they called on Saul and David. There was corruption in their government. They had created their whole government from the bottom up in the days of the Levites. 10 families picked a minister. That minister got together with 9 other ministers. He picked a minister. And they created a network all the way across the country and had no centralized government for 400 years. Yet they could defeat all comers. They handled plagues. They handled famine. They handled starvation. And they prospered. So much so that Rome actually tried to emulate what they were doing. Christ was a king of that government. He actually said, I've come to take the kingdom away from you and give it to another who will bear fruit. Later on, he says, it is my pleasure to appoint unto the little flock a kingdom. Later on, he said what I said earlier. He says, you are not to be like the princes of the Gentiles who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over there, who is to be greatest amongst you is to be servant. How do you do that? 10 families, pick a servant. It's not an office of power. He's not going to dictate to you what you believe, but you picked him because you think he's the closest thing to Christ you got in your community, in your congregation, of small, intimate congregation. You get a 500-man congregation, somebody's dead, you don't know it. You came back, you don't know he's missing. How do you know he's missing? The way they did it was they had intimate, already in places like Indonesia, missionaries who had pretty big churches. They're dividing them up into the tens, hundreds, and thousands because they have to keep track. There's no way to do it. And they had whole nations gathered this way. I can show you in history, we don't have time to go through. That is actually the most common form of government, according to Enterprise of Law, written by a professor, in which I quote sometimes from. It's the most common form of government in man's history. You wouldn't know it from modern history books. He actually refers to this modern idea of centralizing power and control over the choices of the people to be a modern aberration. And there are things that happen when you create a government like that. And the more you move towards that centralized banking, centralized governmental power, centralized making of choices, the more something happens to society, which is not good. Christ came to preach a government of service. Create offices of power, men of power will seek office. Create offices of service, men who seek to serve one another, and Christ came to serve, will seek office. And the more we get away from that form of government, the worse off we are. It begins to change us, it begins to change our society. When Christ came, they had set up quite a bit of different society than Moses had set up. These guys thought they knew Moses. Sadducees, Pharisees, these are political parties. They had a Sanhedrin. That was their Congress. They had votes. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that Herod was baptizing people into the kingdom of heaven before John the Baptist. And what he was doing was setting up a scheme where when you got baptized, you would get a Hebrew name that would be registered in by the scribes in the temple and in the local synagogues, which were extensions off that temple. And when that happened, you were guaranteed a certain amount of entitlements that were paid for by money you had to pay in. If you didn't pay in, you could actually be arrested and put into jail. This was called Corban. It was the Corban of the Pharisees.
Can you spell that?
Well, it's spelled a huge number of different ways. What you see in the Bible, it's spelled Corban in the King James Bible. If the Romans wrote it down, it would be Corban. If you see it transliterated in the Quran, it'd be K-O-R. It's means sacrifice. It is your sacrifice. It's supposedly to God, but in actuality, it is for the taking care of the widows and orphans and needy of your society, and or whatever needs there are. And they called it Corban, but Jesus had a problem with the Corban of the Pharisees. So Jesus was coming with a different idea that wasn't quite as popular with a lot of people, and that's often includes the truth. Patrick Henry was one of these guys who wanted to know the whole truth. He was an amazing guy. We don't have time to go into the stories that would kind of set this in early America, what they were doing. But knowing the whole truth is a good thing, but acting upon that whole truth is essential. So who created the government? Did God create the government? Or was it we the people? The fact is, God does not create government. Men create government. Men either govern themselves or they create government to govern themselves. And if you move in one direction, things change. And those things aren't always changing for the best. How do you create government? You create them with contracts, covenants, and constitutions. And if you're going to do that, especially with an organic constitution that can change and your relationship to it can change, you need to know a little bit of information, and that information is not readily available. Samuel Johnson wrote in when he made the first English dictionary that words are the signs of ideas. So knowing words and how they fit together. For instance, we the people, we think all the time that we the people means us in that constitution. We the people means the people whose names are at the bottom of that. It doesn't mean us. If you read my Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions book, which is free online, I got copies with me, the Supreme Court ruled over and over again that the people weren't a party to the Constitution. Had it been put to a vote, it would have been voted down. It was so unpopular. Patrick Henry, we mentioned earlier, spoke vehemently against it. He said this document was written as if good men would take office. If bad men take office, when bad men take office, they will steal your rights through ambuscade. Now, I don't blame anything on the government. I blame it on the fact that we're not doing what we should be doing. We've become slothful. This isn't new. This happened before. When did they go to kings in Israel? When the voice of the people elected Saul. And they began to look more and more to the king. Early America, they said, as long as you look to government to solve your problems, you will always suffer tyranny. Mm-hmm. We've began to look more and more to the government and less to the community, to each other, and to God. And this is the message that I'm trying to bring, is a way in which we can kind of turn around and head back that other way. Has nothing to do with being anti-government. The Constitution, great document, major flaws in it. They spoke about it in the Anti-Federalist Papers. They even spoke about it in the Federalist Papers. And they warned the people that you need to pay attention to these flaws, because they couldn't. The more power you give the government, the more likely you're going to have a tyrant. So they didn't give all the power to that. They said the people have to retain their rights. 9th and 10th Amendment. Rights retained. You need to retain your rights. Well, how do you lose your rights? Well, you lose your rights through making more covenants, more contracts, more agreements. So anyway, I wrote this book. That first chapter is Holy Matrimony, this covenants of the gods. You notice it's a small g, because there are gods many, and we're not talking about the covenant of God. That's writing his law upon your hearts and upon your mind. But the covenants of the gods, that's another thing. This is the book Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions, which really sheds a lot of light on some of the major problems of the Constitution. I'm not trying to get rid of it. I think they kind of got rid of it without me. So I haven't done anything. But the first chapter was Holy Matrimony versus Marriage. And it was about the contractual nature of marriage. And that contractual nature of marriage is normally a husband and wife. Contracts, two or more people gathered together for a particular purpose as if they were one person. No more twain, one flesh, under a pre-existing authority. Holy matrimony is marriage under God. Even all the churches, even the Roman Catholic Church, you go back, Episcopalian Church, in their laws, they state the church is not a party to the marriage. They're a witness. They're an instrument by which you make a covenant between you and your spouse and God. They're there to help you stay together, supposedly. They're to help facilitate that union, and to protect that union from outside people that might want to undermine that union. But they're not a party. But the state, in a marriage license, is a party. And this is what I presented in that chapter. There's a lot to it. Can't go through all of it. But the point is, I gave it to a number of top attorneys now, not just my father. And some of them really like it. Some of them don't like me. They don't say I'm wrong. They just don't like it because these laws governing a marriage license, there's a difference. I was reading Clark Summary of U.S. American Law, one of the most fundamental law books outlining law, sitting in a little chair out there in the desert because these law books showed up within 24 hours after I said that prayer. Be careful what you pray for. Uh-huh. It may change your life. Yeah. I said, what's going on? Why is the world seeming in this process of decay? You could see it 30 years ago. And now, I mean, if you can't see it, you better shut the TV off because you're missing something. The decline and fall of the Roman Empire, we're seeing it happen today. We're repeating that history. And we're the bigger you are, the harder you fall. So anyway, I wrote that because I was reading Husband and Wife, one of the great domestic relations. Rights of the husband, rights of the wife, rights to custody of the children. Remedies at law, remedies at law, remedies at law. Then over here it said marriage. Rights of the husband, rights of the wife, rights to custody of children, remedy and equity, remedy and equity, remedy and equity. Equity is not law, follows the law. It Bigelow says it winks at the law. But what it is a three-party contract with you, your spouse, and the state, whereby the state has supreme power over that union and everything produced in that union. They can put it asunder anytime they want. At the drop of a hat, one single complaint. Now, we've stopped them several times by creating matrimonial contracts, even after the fact that they made a contract with the state. And then the husband wanted to divorce the wife because he was kind of a stick in the mud. She wanted to keep working it out. But it was so easy. Just go into the courts and the one complains and the judge will give you a no-fault divorce. Just like that. Split the kids up. Divide the assets up. You don't have any say-so in it at all. You can whine and cry and pay a lawyer $10,000, but it's pretty much a done deal. Well, he had signed an agreement that there'd be church arbitration. We just walked in and held up that contract in front of the judge. And the judge said, you got somebody who'll arbitrate this? Yep. He says, case dismissed. Now they'll eventually get a divorce if he never straightens up his act, but at least we slowed him down. But the fact is the important thing is what keeps a husband and wife together? What is the secret? Is it good judges or love? Okay. If you depend on the judges, you don't need the love. And if you depend on the judges, you won't get the love. My father quit law practice 3 times in Texas because of corruption of the courts. It's worse today everywhere. You don't see it. You don't hear it written about. But I've been in courts for people. I've seen people just tore apart, families robbed, everything. That doesn't mean every judge out there is corrupt, but corruption prevails. This is why the people called for a king, Saul. But God said when they called for that king, they went to Samuel and said, give us a king. What was his response? Thomas Paine knew what the response was, wrote about it in the Common Sense. He says, if you want this king, this is what's going to happen. He's going to take the first fruits of your labor. He's going to take the first best of your fields. He's going to take and make his instruments of war. He's going to take your firstborn, your sons. He's going to take your daughters for his purposes. He's going to take and take and take and take. I think there's even another take in there in that whole chapter. You read it. It's Samuel 8. And when your day of calamity comes, go and cry unto the gods which you have chosen for yourself. How'd you choose those? You made a contract. The word God means ruling judge. We'll get that maybe later if you don't burn me at the stake before that. The chapter law versus legal. I don't know. We're going to move along here because then we get to questions. But real briefly, the word law comes from an Anglo-Saxon word meaning just, right, and fair. If you said that in Latin, it would be jus juris. The word legal comes from a Latin word, lex legis. There are legal systems within law. When my dad almost never told me any stories about himself when he said, they're not going to like you because I wrote this Holy Matrimony versus Marriage, explaining what that all means. He told me a story about his own life. He was the highest scorer ever on the Texas bar exam, so he got to speak in front of the American Bar Association. And he spoke on the natural law. Now, if you go back to some of those early American documents, they talk about the natural law, the law of nature and nature's God. They talk about inalienable rights that this God gave you, your creator gave you. That's the natural law. That's the law under which all legal systems are created. Legal systems are like, I compared it the other day. Everybody see the movie Nemo? At the end of the movie Nemo, when the fish are rolling down towards the water and they fall in the water and they're in those plastic bags still, and they think they're free because they're in the ocean, but they're still inside the plastic bag. That's the legal system. You're really not free. You're just swimming around in the bag, surrounded by the natural law. But you have no access to it. And this legal systems can be good for the wicked, for the slothful. The slothful should be under tribute, the Bible tells us. But for those who are not slothful in the ways of God, they shouldn't be, but they are. Everybody's under tribute today, which is another chapter. But anyway, that legal system, it comes from that lex legere, which means to bind. How do they bind you? Contract. Maximum of law, contract makes the law. If you sign the contract, you make the agreement, you accept the benefit, you owe Caesar. And you have to pay Caesar. You have to pay Pharaoh. I mean, how did they get in the bondage of Pharaoh? They made a deal. Take care of us. And we'll give you 20% of everything we got. One-fifth. 20% income tax. You go to Egypt today, income tax is 20%. That's what it is. Still to this day. Thousands of years later. Make $1 million, 20%. Make $2 million, 20%. But David didn't make the deal in America, so it can be a little higher than that. That was a ceiling limit. Anyway, there's a lot of chapters in there, citizen versus citizen. There's quite a bit of difference. They define civil rights as a natural inhabitant with certain rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and marriage. They actually even include the word marriage there. Not subject to the administration of government. But then it says, as otherwise defined, civil rights are, by virtue of the 14th Amendment and other subsequent acts, subject to the administration of government. So anyway, there's something going on. The Covenants of God is 15 chapters showing all these different ways in which we go deeper and deeper into a legal system, giving more and more power to somebody. When Saul was a great guy, he was a defender of the weak. He was a seeker of righteousness. He protected people. He saved people. But when they made him king, power corrupts. So who's the sinner, Saul or the people? When they elected Saul, God allowed it. But he said it was a rejection of him. And so just because God allows us to do a bad thing, we shouldn't do it. But anyway, Paul, this brief thing, this is actually not in that book, but what most people say is, was Paul a Roman citizen? The word actually there is Romeos. It's a Greek word, means whole. If you read the text, I mean, it's right in the text. And I tell you, and I don't want to pick on all the ministers who go to the seminary and get told a story that's not true and didn't ask enough questions and didn't look deep enough and accepted what was told them. The fact is, from the beginning, what was the devil trying to do? Deceive through half-truths and lies. He has not stopped just because it's 2011. He's been working at this a long time, and a lot of people have been deceived. And it takes a certain amount of humility. People say, you always think you're right. I didn't come up with these ideas because I kept thinking I was right. I admitted I was wrong, and I come up with a different idea. This is well verified that Paul was not a Roman citizen. The head of the cohort, if you were any kind of a centurion, any kind of a member of a legion, you were a citizen of Rome automatically. It's part of the deal. You 20 years as an enlisted man, 18 years as an officer. No, I got it. I got it somewhere there. 18 years for an officer. But you had citizenship from day one, once you were in the military. The head of the cohort comes and says, you're Romeos? And he says, yeah. And he says, I had to pay a great sum for this freedom. He's not talking about citizenship. He's talking about being whole and possession of your rights. Paul says, I was born to it. Why? Cilicia, a republic, respected by Rome. In a pure republic, you're still in possession of your rights. But in an indirect democracy, you may not be. Paul was still Romeos. He was in possession of his rights. You could not try him in the legal administrative courts of Rome. You had to try him over there in that natural law. These are the two different systems working side by side. This is what I'm showing throughout that entire book, that if you move over here through contract, you give up those God-given rights. But the bad thing is, what happens when we keep looking to that government to solve our problem? We keep giving them more and more power. We're corrupting them. We're tempting them with more and more power. We should be ashamed of ourselves. Poor government. Don't you feel bad for them? All that temptation? I mean, could you withstand that temptation? Christ could. Moses had a little hard time with it at times. But, you know, Gideon said, I and my family, we will not rule over you. This is the whole thing. We have to learn to rule over ourselves and do the jobs of government and not ask government to do the jobs that God gave us. We need to take care of one another. So anyway, another chapter, employee versus enslaved. I explained that, touched on it already. So everybody was in bondage in Egypt. So we get these pictures in these movies that say they were in bondage and they're all pulling ropes around. That's not the way it was. They were in a corvée system of statutory labor, and a portion of their labor had to go to support the government. And they did that a lot of ways. Sometimes they actually did have to do work crews, but if you were wealthy enough, you could just hire somebody who would, you would pay him, he'd go do your share. Or you just send in the money. You wouldn't have to go. And this has been around for a lot of time. Babylon used it. And I explain it in great detail, but not tonight. But anyway, God sent Moses to lead them out of that. Said, never go back there again. As a matter of fact, he says, if you ever pick a leader that can exercise authority, a king, Deuteronomy 17:16, there are four things you need to write down. Write down where? In your constitution. Constitution is to regulate government. So there are four things you need to write down in there. No treaty-making powers. I'll explain this. I explain this in contracts, covenants, and constitutions, also in Higher Liberty, all free on the net. We can't go through it in detail, but I'll just give you the brief rundown. No treaty-making powers. If he has treaty-making powers, he can make contracts for you. And that's too much power. That's dangerous, you know. He'll be making deals with all kinds of people. He's not to have any standing army. Israel for 400 years was militia. Rome rose to power with no standing army. They had a militia. No salaries, no pensions, none of that. This was the law in Israel. This is why when Jesus was king, the soldiers mocked him. Because they were losing their job. They were losing their pensions. They had moved from that free will army, free will offerings of taking care of the widows and orphans, free will support of the government that you see all throughout the Old Testament, into a system where you had to pay in. And somebody had the power to say how much you had to pay in. And that's too much power because they wanted more and more and more. And then whatever you gave them, they spent it and wasted it, and they bankrupted the nation.
Sound familiar?
Is history repeating itself or what? Whose fault is it? Is it the government's fault? Or is it our fault? Have we been slothful? Now, I'm not making the government out of saints, but the fact is you're not going to get anywhere by blaming them. I mean, what was the problem with Adam and Eve? God said, what have you done, Adam? Did Adam fall down on his face and say, Lord, I've sinned against you, I disobeyed you, I'm sorry, I beg your forgiveness? Or he said, the woman you gave me. He blamed it on God. Now, what are we doing? The government is made by God. We don't have any responsibility. We make the government two ways. One is we elect it, we write contracts. We're slothful. We don't do what we need to do. I on the CNN, when I was interviewed by them, I, I saw the question coming 8 seconds before she said it. And I said, as soon as she asked the question, I said, I love government. I think government's great. But I think sometimes we create governments that we shouldn't be creating. And we create them mostly by our sloth, by our greed, by our avarice. All these things that are called vices, which are simply the absence of virtue. If you want your rights back, you want your liberty back, you have to take back your responsibility. You have to take your responsibility back to your wife, to your husband, to your children, to your grandfathers, to your neighbor, to your community. And we have to shut the TV off in order to do that. We have to actually try to come together and figure out ways of how can we help. This is the way the early Christians were operating. This is what they had to learn. They spent several years in serious plagues, famines, fire and brimstone from the sky. Something was happening. Bad things, earthquakes, wrath of God kind of stuff. Well, history repeats itself. But it straightened them out enough that they could leave Egypt at one time. Millions of people march across the desert. They actually weren't leaving Egypt because the Egyptian jurisdiction at this time went all the way to Canaan, including Canaan. But there was no more persona jurisdiction. They had no more contract. They were allowed to go. And they had to learn how to live like free people. You can take man out of the Egypt, but you can't always take Egypt out of the man. And they struggled with that for a long time. Who built the first city-state? Cain. What was Nimrod? Even the word in Hebrew for city is the same word for anguish, terror. Same word. City, anguish, terror. Because they're talking about a civil authority. They're not talking about downtown. They're talking about a civil authority. When they asked for a king and Samuel said, go back to your tents. And they went back to their tents. Then they came back again and he told them what they'd get when they asked for a king. And then he it's like, can you believe these people? But they still wanted a king. He says, go back to the city. If you look at the Hebrew, that's actually they're saying, okay, go into the city. Go into the civil government. Civil government is the law that men make for themselves. Later on, when they asked Rehoboam for their freedom, and Rehoboam says, okay, go back to your city. And he thinks it over, talks over his buddies, and he decides to come back and make one of the most ridiculous political speeches I've ever heard in my life. My father whipped you with whips. I'm going to whip you with scorpions. I don't know. That must miss something in the translation, but I can't imagine that they were wanting to elect him after that. But anyway, what they said is, what is David to us? They gave up their position within the kingdom, and they went back to their tents. The Levites were to serve the tents of the congregation. Why did I start out with holy matrimony versus marriage? Because God made me. But the fact is the family is the building block of the kingdom. That's the corporation of Christ. That's the corporation of God. That's the government of God. How does that work with other people? How do you bind yourself together with contracts? You bind yourself together with love. You have to love one another. Moses said that. Love one another. Jesus is just quoting Moses. Once you find out what Abraham was doing, you'll find out why that was. So that's back to that servant thing. Famines. It says shift happens. Things change. And the big question is, who are you going to call when bad things happen? Well, some of you are going to call on the Lord, but over and over again in the Old Testament it says, go and cry unto the gods that you've chosen for yourself, because I will not hear you in that day. What's the thing? You know, God is loving. God is patient. But he says, I will not strive with you forever. We need to be actively pursuing the kingdom. When he asks, how many are saved? Many or few? Jesus kind of skirted around the question. I'm accused of doing that from time to time. But he says, strive. Strive. Now, you can't earn salvation. There's no way you can earn salvation. It's a gift. It has to be a gift. There's no way God's going to owe you anything. But you got to turn around and go where Christ said. People draw all these pictures of Christ. What did he actually say? I am astounded. We got 40,000 denominations in the world today. Actually, there's more than 40,000, but it's close enough. I'm not counting anymore. But they all got doctrines. You would be shocked at how few of them include the direct statements of Jesus Christ. I asked a room full of pastors. They asked me to come and speak. You know, that was dangerous enough. And so but I got a whole room full of pastors, and I said, what did Jesus... They asked me to come, and I actually forgot about it. I was out building fence. And they came looking for me, got me, and they said, come on, we want you to come talk. 7 hours before I shut up. So they... You have to be careful what you ask for. But anyway, in that process, I said, what are the weightier matters? Christ said that we should be tending to the weightier matters. Whole room full of pastors. Couldn't name one. Jesus said we're supposed to be attending to the weightier matters, and these pastors don't even... I'm telling them. You guys don't even know what he called the weightier matters? One guy finally fumbled around, and he got one of them. And I said, he's cheating, because I told them all four last week. I said, there's something wrong. Now, I'm not blaming. I know you guys are good guys, because I know these men. Well, most of them are good guys. That one guy over in the corner, he wasn't really a good guy, but I won't say who he was. But he didn't come back next time either. All the other guys did. But anyway, they're good guys, but they have been deceived. They have been lied to. We should expect that. There are many, many good people that have been lied to. It says they will be deceived. Now when they find out the truth that God wants us to actually strive, he wants us to actually attend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith.
Let's say those again.
Law, judgment,
all of us.
Mercy, and faith. There's a test later. Anyway, I didn't know I was going to go that far, but anyway, we're straying a little bit from some of the presentations in Texas and all that stuff. Different crowd in Texas. I think it'll always be a different crowd in Texas. I saw that picture, so I put that FEMA go home. There's a lot of articles. You go look up on the internet, there's a lot of articles complaining about FEMA. I don't complain about FEMA. I think FEMA is doing exactly what I would expect it to do. Besides, I am FEMA. This is given to me by the guys in Australia, HHC FEMA. That's Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary. Okay? We operate by faith. Those guys, that doesn't stand for faith. Okay? That stands for federal. Federal comes from a French word meaning feudal. They have lots of money to help you with. They have lots of stuff to help you with. But all that stuff they have, they took away from your neighbor. Legally took it away from your neighbor. If you want more stuff from them, they got to take more stuff from your neighbor. Now, what's the law? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. These are the benefactors. Excuse me, I made a mistake. These are the men who call themselves benefactors, but exercise authority one over the other. That's what FEMA is. That's what the government is. The government didn't used to be in the charity business in America. It's an organic constitution. It can change. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, there was no food stamps, welfare, unemployment. Is that me? I'll just check and see if somebody's... They may be calling FEMA. Oh, it's my home. Hang on here for a second. This is a terrible faux pas. Hello? Yeah, there's a lot of people staring at me right now. Yeah. Oh, okay. Is she at the house, or did I call? Okay. What? Yeah, I'll just call you later and we'll figure it out. There'll be a break. These people have to get a break pretty soon. I'm being pretty mean to them. Okay. Okay, bye. Evidently, there's a slight emergency, but it can wait. Anyway, I'll get to a break here. I have no concept of time, so you'll have to help me with time. Anyway, this is another picture, greetings from Camp FEMA. Here's a Church of Christ, right? Beware of the FEMA death camps. The Jews thought it wouldn't happen. And then I saw this, and I love FEMA, but oops, there's a little error. This is a volunteer team. We've actually worked with them, Oregon Disaster Medical Team. FEMA hates these guys. This is all volunteer funds, no government funds whatsoever. First responders at Katrina, 911. They're over in Japan. These guys go all over the world, set up a hospital instantaneously, all free of federal funding. Good. No state funding. Nothing but free will offerings. They wanted to do an example of what they could do, and we offered them a town called Paisley. We got everybody in the town to volunteer to be sick, to be terrorists, to be in an overturned school bus. I mean, there's just one disaster after another, which is the life story of Paisley. They're good at it. But, I mean, they actually, created false wounds, and we had a terrorist actually from Germany who spoke German, who died of the bubonic plague and all this stuff. It was all enacted. But they came in, set up the hospital, helicopters coming in. My son filmed it. We filmed it to deliver the film to FEMA and Congress to show what we could do with all free will offerings. It says on there, courtesy of His Holy Church. We're doing them favors all the time. But anyway, there is no end to what you can do. And I tell you this, there is no end to what you will have to do. I do not want to preach a gospel of fear. If you follow any of the suggestions I suggest here or tonight or further on down the road out of fear, it's not going to do you any good. I got a spare tire in my car. It's not because I'm afraid. It's just good sense. I got a bag of granola stuck under the seat I didn't tell you about. It's just good sense. I just got it with me. I'm a good scout. Be prepared. And the fact is, you can't be prepared enough. But there's nothing that will prepare you more than to start loving your neighbor as yourself. Loving God. Doing it in the way God said to do it. Stop coveting your neighbor's goods to the agency of government. God doesn't approve of that. And it's a process. It's about turning around, repenting. Constantine baptized all the people in Milan, but he didn't say repent and get baptized. He just said, get baptized. You know what happens if you don't repent? You're just all wet. It changes you. Early America, what made America great? Constitution? Or love for one another? Being prepared. Guy out plowing his field.
That's what he has on his back.
He has a rifle. But he doesn't have it just for his protection. He has it for his family's protection and his neighbor's protection. These are the Minutemen who dropped everything, not by pay, not because they were professional soldiers. They dropped everything and came because somebody was usurping authority. You read the book, Thy Kingdom Comes, you will see this is the way Europe stayed free for almost 1,000 years until they started crowning kings. It's a whole history that just disappeared out of your history books. You don't see it anymore. It's just gone. You get an 1800 history book, and they tell you all about it. You get 1700, the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. The early church was referred to in the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, written and published in 1776, one of the most popular books amongst Americans, a series of books. The church was called a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire. Why? Because if you lost your job, you broke your leg, you got sick, your father died, you went to church. That's where you went. You didn't go to the government. You went to church. Now, you could have gone to the government. Rome had universal health care for almost 100 years. It broke the bank. And some of their medical practices were probably not to be desired. But to tell you the truth, some of their medical practices today aren't all that desirable. It's kind of like paying the Inquisition guy, Please torture me to death. I mean, there's some great things. We've got doctors. We just got a dentist who signed up with us in Texas because they see this. There's something that's speaking to their hearts. And they're saying, Dad, this, we should be doing this. We should have been doing this. If we'd been doing this for the last 100 years, you wouldn't have had 1 million people lose their homes. Actually, I just understated that. There was over 2 million people lost their homes, and there's probably another 2 million lined up to lose their homes. And how many people lost their life savings? And we sit here watching TV. You know, it's unbelievable. These were called Minutemen. Today, we got Wait a Minute Men. Now, wait a minute, I got to go do this. I got to go do that. Christ had the same problem. Hey, I got to go bury my dad. I got to do this. He said, let the dead bury the dead. So you either Minutemen or you're the dead. Now, how do you be? Now, I'm not telling everybody to go get guns. I mean, we don't. How come these guys all of a sudden got? They weren't walking around in the woods with camo on and pretending to be a militia. They were there for each other when there was flood, when there was fire, when there was famine, when there was sickness. They were there. They were creating the bonds that holds a society together by being there for one another when they had real needs. If you just wanted to get a welfare check, you don't get one in the kingdom, because if you don't work, you don't eat. But if you have a real need, we'll be there. If we're in the kingdom, we'll be there for each other. And that creates bonds that will go on for generations and generations. There's a movie, Band of Brothers. It is, that German kid who is an exchange student who played the bubonic plague victim. We had him watch this. We gave it to him. And at first it starts out kind of slow. He's waiting for the shooting and stuff. And it's a big, long, I don't know, 6 hours or something like that series. And at the end, they interview the actual soldiers that paratrooped in and fought all the way across Germany together. And you actually saw the guys who survived in the interview. He wept when he heard those guys being interviewed. It made the war alive to him. They don't talk about the war in Germany a lot. You know, his dad was on the other side, and his granddad. But these guys were a band of brothers because they suffered together. They shared together. They were there for each other when they needed to be. It wasn't, but they, I can guarantee you, when they were crawling up to save their buddy and getting shot at and apologizing for being wounded, they weren't thinking of the Constitution. They weren't thinking of the flag. They weren't thinking of FDR. They were thinking of each other. Those are the bonds that hold society together in hard times. All those other things. They weren't thinking of their religious doctrines. They weren't thinking of any of those things. When I refer to religious doctrines, I mean all these things that you see in these 40,000 congregations. I mean, they have a lot of the truth. And I don't want anybody to leave their churches. A lot of people say, can I still belong to my church? Well, I don't want you to belong to your church, but I want you to go to it. That's where your neighbors are. Go to it. They say a lot of truthful things. But keep asking that still small voice in your heart and rightly dividing the truth in your own heart. Question. Ask questions. If your pastor doesn't want you to ask questions, you better start questioning yourself about your pastor. Because, I mean, when Jesus spoke, it was questions and answers all the time. And that's Jesus letting them ask questions. He said, well, you shouldn't be asking me questions like this. I mean, did that come out of Jesus? So why is that coming out of pastors? But anyway, it's a remarkable movie, except one episode that wasn't directed by Tom Hanks. It was directed by another guy, and they got in at least a little brief nudity. But anyway, same with these guys. That was the Kingdom of Heaven. Everybody wanted me to see that movie because I talk about the Kingdom of Heaven. Well, there wasn't a lot of Kingdom of Heaven in there, but this is a scene where they're trying to take that guy, and they're going to unjustly murder him in their legal system, and these guys are tending to the weightier matter of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. But they're willing to stand up. Many of them died in this incident. They died because they stood up with somebody else. They stood up with somebody else because they had shared their lives together. And that's what we have to do. If we're looking away to these other places, early Israel organized They always got the tents in a row. Probably wasn't that organized. The point is that they were creating networks based on family. And these networks are based on the tens, hundreds, and thousands picking servant ministers, and those servant ministers connecting with each other. And the Amish people don't need insurance. They got each other. If a house burns down, they build it back. They come and they show up. And there's going to be some guys that show up late and leave early. And when their house burns down, they'll get a house, but it may not be as nice as everybody else's because that's human nature. But that's good because it kind of reminds people, iron sharpening iron kind of thing. But there's a thing called fractal networking, and I can explain that later. But basically, it's not just the ministers, it's people knowing people. How do you keep a whole nation together with this concept? You have feasts. There's a reason why they had the feasts. It's, God doesn't care if you meet in a tent or something. There's a purpose to why he's doing everything. You've got this village over here, this congregation over here. They're doing really good. They like each other. They help each other. They become isolated from the people way over there. So they get together once a year. Everybody camps out in a tent for a whole week, 10 days. So what happens? Everybody in the whole nation's got a tent. Every time there's a disaster, what happens? They ship tents over. So they already got tents. So they're all ready for a disaster. The other thing happens is you got all these families meeting together. They're meeting old friends that maybe they were in a battle with 20 years before. But what really they're doing is boys meet girls and girls meet boys and they get married. And the girl goes off and lives with this family. And now if somebody attacks that congregation over there, they're united. This guy's going to go because his granddaughter and his daughter and his grandsons are over there. And this crisscrossing pattern is all across the nation because families have made treaties with other families because they shared their daughters. And they share common bloodline now. When you got a king, king makes a treaty. Why did Solomon have so many wives? Every time he made a treaty, he got another wife. That's what that's all about. They're not to accumulate wives. They're not to make these treaties. And, you know, Clinton was trying that, I think. But. So how do you gather together? What binds you together without destroying what you are is its love. In order to do that, you have to start thinking about ways, and there's a million ways. And I don't know if it's time for a break. I got to call home for a minute. We can take a little break, but I want to go to questions afterwards. If you guys still want to stick around, if you're ready to run for it, this is your opportunity to sneak out. But what we're doing is we've gone back to the first century church and taken a look at it and found out what they were actually doing. Why did seven men have to be picked to tend to the daily administration? What was Paul really doing? Why did he appeal to Rome when he had already been exonerated by Agrippa and as this preaching the kingdom? Why did they say these are the men that do contrary to the decrees of Caesar? They didn't say disobey, because they didn't disobey Caesar. They just did different. They didn't have to obey because there was another king, one Jesus. They were actually a government. And we can, this is a lot different than what you've been told, but you know, if you want to argue it, hey, make my day. I've been doing my homework for a long time, and I've got a good teacher. They were actually taking care of the needy of their society, and that's what pure religion is, to take care of the needy of your society, the widows and orphans, the needy of your society, unspotted by the world. And the word they use there that they translate into world in the Greek text unequivocally, without question, without any exception, is the word for the state. The constitutional order, government, or state. They were taking care of one another without the free bread and circuses of Rome. Without the health care of Rome. And I can show you over and over and over again, and I do in the books, and I do in videos and audios, and I'm going to do it a lot more until somebody burns me at the stake. And we'll show you how that first century church organized itself, but it's up to you. I can't do it for you. I spent a lot of years working with different groups, and I was doing too much, and I have been scolded and rebuked. But I will do everything I can to help you do it. Everybody says, build it, and they will come. I said, if they make me build it, why would I want them there? You build it. You'll be there already. And you'll appreciate it. And the fact is I think there's people out there all over America that would build it. There are people that want to help one another. I mean, there's still, we have the seeds of the most charitable people in the world in this country. We just have to let shine some light on it, water it, nurture it up. And the fact is we see the government being less and less responsive, less and less, they're incapable. Even if they wanted to do what they need to do in the time of disaster, they are incapable of doing it. Everywhere you see these disasters, where you see people really making it work, is when the people are working at making it happen. So, anyway, I'll give you all a break, and then we'll take it from there.
About 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, and we'll just go straight to questions and answers. I got a ton of stuff. I could keep you here till the cows come home, but they'll kick us out before that, and I want to go to questions and answers. So, yeah, 5 minutes? Okay. Most people aren't doing things about these injustices, and you could go on, we would call them pity parties, where people all stand around and complain about this injustice and that injustice, and it is important to know it. It is important to speak out about it. But what do you do about it? This is what I hear everywhere. People are wondering, what do we do? People who want to do, they don't know. There's no shepherd. But there is a shepherd. He was Christ. He was telling us. But we haven't been told what he was actually doing. He was actually a king. You know, it's not the, I already talked about we the people, this Good Samaritan concept. How many people are gathering together to take care of that widow and orphan? I'm not widow and orphan, but literally she's a widow and her children are a widow and orphan because he's in Leavenworth. Who's taking care of them? Who's supplying the money? We don't even have an avenue to do that. I'll bet you if you went to their church and you say, oh, Pastor, are you taking care of them? He'll say, well, no, that's they should go on welfare. Yeah. Well, why should they go on welfare? Why don't they go to church? That's what the early church did. The early church, you read it, Justin's apology to the Emperor of Rome. He says, we gather together, and those that have share with those that don't have. Now, why is he writing the Emperor of Rome and telling that? Because Christians were in trouble because they were idiotists, non-participators in the system of social welfare in Rome, because the system of social welfare in Rome operated by money that was collected into their temples at the point of a sword. It was a tax. It was a compelled offering. It was not a free will offering. And Christ said it was to be a free will. He told you how a good government operates. How much do you owe in taxes? Nothing. Peter would say to the people who were Christians. They were in the temple daily. That's where you collect the taxes. And the apostles are saying, how much do you owe? And they say, well, I owe this much. Well, how much can you pay? I can only pay this much. Paid in full. Jesus has a whole parable about that. He's talking about government. The Bible is about government. It mentions religion 5 times, 4 times in a bad sense. The religion of the Pharisee. What was the religion of the Pharisee? We force you to pay into the treasury. And we tell you how much. And if you don't, we arrest you. And Jesus said, no. If you do that, you know what will happen to your society? You will have people that will close the door, who will complain about stuff and do nothing about it. There'll be people raped in your streets and nobody will do anything. They'll shut their windows, they'll shut their doors, and they'll say, that's not my business. Because it hasn't been their business. We are creating a society there where there is no hue and cry at injustice.
Creating?
Well, we are. I agree. I'm being nice.
No, I know.
I'm a nice guy.
How about the cities?
Yeah. I remember hearing about the person laying there bleeding in New York City and everybody walks over.
Yeah. Stepping over.
Now you don't have to go to New York City. You go to rural America.
Right.
Every day.
There was a fire come through our valley. It burned the forest all over there. The neighbors got together and they put fire lines around. There were neighbors standing between the flames when the deck behind them was smoking. The windows broke that we backed off when the windows were breaking, but the house didn't burn up. The Forest Service, who was the ones who were supposed to be putting out the fire, had the police come down there and threatened to arrest us.
Yeah. Right. And probably bring the EPA in for not putting up a silt fence for the trenches.
One cop was sent over by the Forest Service to pick on one of the ranchers there. Actually, a couple of them were there. And one of the bigger ones, I won't say what his name is in case this ever gets out, but I don't think he'd care. But he walked up to the cop. And the cop said, "You know, you're not supposed to be doing this." And he walked up to the cop, and he stood in front of him, and he was about this high over the cop. And he says, "So what are you going to do about it? You want to arrest me? Go ahead and arrest me. Arrest me for saving my neighbor's house." I mean, they actually came, and they wanted to evacuate me. And I said, "I'm not going anywhere." And I said, "I'm going to be right here. My house is the safest place in all the valley because I'm completely surrounded by green, and I'm way away from the forest. And I have underground tanks that supply water even when the power was out," which was already out by then. And he says, "Well, you have to evacuate," we say. And I said, "No, I don't. I don't have to evacuate. Besides, every fire truck that's in the valley has asked to park in my field if the fire blows up. And if you evacuate me, who's going to bring them coffee?" "You're going to be answerable to those firemen. I'm going to tell them I couldn't bring you coffee because he made me evacuate." And he walked away. I was actually being a little bit funnier about it at the time. But anyway, the point is that we're not used to doing that. We used to be minutemen for each other. This is what made this country great. We came to each other's aid. We were there for each other. And the only way to do that is to create a network where you know who each other is. And most of the people out there don't want to be a part of this network. They're not awake yet. They don't understand this contractual nature of government. They're not thinking outside the box. Some of you are thinking outside the box. Some of you got your head way out of the box. Some of you are climbing over the edge. Most of those people don't even know there's a box. That legal box, that plastic bag, it's a see-through plastic bag, and they look out and we're free.
Fish in the water.
But they never try to swim beyond the bag. Because they're comfortable. Go ahead.
If we build a network, obviously, like you said, most people are unaware, and you've got a bigger problem. Most people are just plain immoral, right? Yeah. You can't rely on them.
5% of the Roman Empire was Christian. At the most. 5%. Yet it had such a profound effect that Constantine wanted to emulate Christianity 300 years later. I tell you, it's like Gideon's army. If we will do it, it doesn't matter the numbers. And besides that, these people will wake up, some of them. There will be foolish virgins. You know, I mean, Jesus is a loving God, but yet he talks about the foolish virgins knocking on the door and they not opening up. But the fact is, you know, if they will change and they will wake up, great. People are waking up. This is the good news. I mean, I had goose pimples in Texas. And I don't get goose pimples very often. That's not that. But, I mean, these people are waking up. They're saying all the time, "This is speaking to me." I don't know how many times I've heard on this trip, "I have been waiting for this all my life." Now, I don't know if it's true. I don't know how much is written on their heart. I don't know. I know what I have to do. I have to go around and tell people. I have to link people up. But you have to build it. If we get notoriety, we get this message out on a big radio station or in big media, people are going to be calling up and saying, "How do I find other people?" I'm not going to put everybody's name on the internet. I'm not going to create a register. That's not the way a network works. They were Christianity was cell groups. You say that, suddenly everybody gets excited. But it was this network. That's the way it works.
Cell groups, not cell mates, right?
Well, there were a few cell mates. I mean, Christ went to jail. Peter went to jail. But it's intimate brotherhoods. It's families within families within families. You know, that's why that's what it is. It's government imitates families. Pilate saith unto him, what is the truth? This will be kind of interesting. My kingdom is not of this world. You're going to hear this all the time. My kingdom is not of this world. What world was Jesus talking about? The planet?
The legal world.
Cosmos. Who said that? Is that you?
Yeah.
You, did you get that from reading my stuff? You do that on your own?
No, I don't
know. Okay. Was it this world?
No.
Was it this world?
No.
Was it that world?
No.
Okay. Four to five different words in the Bible that are translated into world. One is aeon, means age, broken, unbroken age. The other one is ekomene, and they had different meanings over a period of time. Originally in the Greeks, it meant the Greeks, where they lived. The Romans, when they started using it, it's where they lived. On one side of the wall were the Romans, the other side were the barbarians. The barbarians weren't in ekomene. That's the way they used the word. But that wasn't the word either. But gay was another word, land, as opposed to water, dry land. But the word was cosmos, as he said. Cosmos, at the time, it meant the discipline of an army, and next, the order constitution of a state. Right out of the concordance, it meant an apt and harmonious arrangement or constitution, order, or government. Pontius Pilate was sitting in the judgment seat. He was sitting in the judgment seat because that's why Rome was invited there as a peacekeeping force to determine who was the king. There had been no king in Jerusalem since Herod had died, and he had murdered his own son, executed his own son by permission of Rome because his son tried to usurp authority. The rest of the kingdom was in the hands of Herod Antipas, and the other third was in the hands of Philip, but nobody in that kingdom, part of the kingdom where Jerusalem was. They're still fighting over who runs Jerusalem. I mean, you talk about history. Libya. Why was Rome in the area to come to Judea? Because of the dang pirates in Libya. Why did the halls of Montezuma, the shores of Tripoli, because of the pirates in Libya? Why did Reagan send troops over there? Because of the pirates in Libya. There's pirates in Libya. Get used to it. Forget about going over there. But they're going over there. They're actually going over there because it's one of the largest aquifers in that area of the world. And water is going to be one of the most important things coming up. I don't know how many people know where the other largest aquifer, the largest aquifer in the world is, and who's buying up all the land over there.
Bush.
Yeah. Mooney's. Yeah. They're all, it's one of the largest. Water is going to become a very important thing. It was the last time we had a plague when we were in Egypt. It's going to be a very important thing now. If you lose power in this country, all power in this country, is there anything that could make you lose all power worldwide, at least on one whole side of the planet, in a minute?
EMP?
You know, who can make the biggest EMP in the world?
The sun.
Right now, NASA, National Academy of Sciences, Kaku, all kind, who's a major physicist, and there's physicists all over. I've been saying it for a dozen years. See, mega flare hit this planet, which is likely to happen in the next 3 years over any other time in the last 50 years because of standard things that happen on a regular basis, and shift happens. You will lose power. 80 to 90% of all power in the United States, and it's not coming back for 6 months to a year. You have to replace the generators. They melt down into balls of copper. We don't make those generators anymore. Who makes the generators?
China.
Do they make them way ahead and have them all stockpiled on shelves? They make them to order. How long does it take to make a generator? 6 months.
And you got to ship it.
And if there's no power in China, they ain't making it.
No, they don't care if you pay for
Yeah.
Do they only burn out when they're running?
You could actually shield them and disconnect them, and they could survive. But if they're hooked up to the wires, the charge becomes so great in the backlog that it will just melt them down. But you would have to know, and the fact is they'll know when the CME comes. It takes 24 hours, 48 hours to get here. A CME caused the Japanese earthquake. We told people about it the day before. We have videos up on the net saying there's expected a big earthquake in Japan based on looking at the sun alone. I have the videos here I could show you. They're already loaded up on YouTube ahead of time. I talked to people on the phone. We know people in Japan. They had 6 months of stuff stacked up underneath their beds and they were on the other side of Japan. Japan's three plates coming together. That's why there is a Japan. They're all crashing into each other right there. Japan's going to see nothing but earthquakes here. But we're getting to the scary stuff. Yeah, well, there's going to be some of that too. They went down quite a bit.
Yeah, 8 foot in one area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What would happen if Florida went down 8 feet?
There wouldn't be any people coming up here to support the economy right now. I think they're coming right now.
The thing is, God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son that they might be saved. We have to have the same attitude. But we're not here to save everybody who wants to be a drug addict, a lazy bum. But we want to save those that hear His voice. You know, and I believe I'm saying what Christ said. I believe I'm saying what the prophets said. And I could be totally delusional, and you should probably all edge for the door. But if you hear what I say and it rings in your heart, then you got to get together. The important thing is not that you know me, that you know each other. And that you find all the other people out there that will hear this message and begin to come. And there's also the extended network. There are people that Christ says, come into the kingdom. He says, why us? They don't know they're Christians. They don't know they believe in Jesus. They didn't profess Jesus. They're saying, why us? That's what it says. They wouldn't say that if they thought they were saved. But He says, come into the kingdom anyway. And He says, why? Because you helped the least of my brethren. You gave me drink when I was thirsty. And that may be a big thing. You gave me clothes when I was hungry, and you visited me when I was in jail. So that tells you that His brethren might end up in jail from time to time. Yeah, because they don't like you when you point out that they're in error. They don't like that. They didn't like it when Jesus did it. They're not going to like it when we did it. But I'm not interested in pointing out people who are in error. I'm interested in people who want to do the right thing. And we've been led away, slowly edging away from the right thing. So now good men are going to jail because they stood up for what's right. And people are going in their house and saying, that's a shame. What's on TV? That's not enough. It's got to be, that's a shame. Let's do something about it. Let's get together with this community. Let's find out what. We had a snowstorm go through the Midwest and our little tiny network. We've only been networking for a year. In our little tiny network, they were calling everybody that was in the network. How'd you do there in the storm? They were all okay. We had the floods in Australia. They called everybody that was in the network in the flooded area. They were all okay. Dry land, plenty of food, plenty of water. They were all ready. They were actually looking around for people they could help. And they says, well, we couldn't help anybody. They called up. They were ready. You'll get your chance. Trust me. Anyway, we already talked about religion, five words and translated religion and pure religion is undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit, and that visit means to take care of, doesn't this say, stop by and say hi. The fatherless, meaning fatherless, those people who their family is so injured that they don't have anybody to take care of them. The widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. What world? Again, which world? Aeon, Ekumene. It's that constitutional order or system of government, because he won't apply to Rome for medical care. Universal health care in Rome. It wasn't universal at the time that was said, but it was shortly after it was. But they had a health care system. Go ahead.
Well, Have you seen a DVD called The Peacemaker's Solution? A young man up in Alaska has really got something going up there good.
Okay, I think I know who you're talking about, but I haven't seen the DVD yet.
It's really worthwhile.
Okay.
Give me a rabbit or something. Oh, I got it. I'll send you a copy.
Okay. But anyway, you got a question? Anybody got a question?
I had two tapes sitting here on the table, and I can't find them, and I want to
take them. I sold them.
Oh, you?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you?
I didn't sell them.
These over here?
You know, that sign that was on the top, that was of the cross, this is what was written on it. Now, you always see, they show you a crucifix, and they got, you know, a couple of letters on there, and it's always a broken board up there. And I think that is such a travesty because they have known for years, it says right in the Bible, it said in three lines, this is the king of Judea. It was written by the procurator of Rome. It was an official document. He's the king. These are his servants. This is a government. Pentecost is when you elected all your government servants in Judea. You know, I was telling you, the string whip, they fired the money changers. On tax day, they were expected to collect by 1982 value of silver. They would have brought in $76 million in silver. By today's standard, that would be more than double, probably triple that. Their cut would have been $9 million in 1982 dollars. And Jesus just fired them. They're not going to get that. Unless they get rid of this Jesus guy, who's standing in the gastophone, in the Greek it says gastophone, that's in the treasury, instructing the ministers. He's the king. Only the king could do that. Only the king could fire the money changers. Somehow or other, we think he's an itinerant preacher going around in sandals just giving people good ideas. He's the king of the kingdom of God on earth, and he's taking the kingdom away from guys who had turned it into forced contributions, moved away from free will offerings, was no longer bearing fruit, and saying, I'm going to give it to a group that's going to bear fruit.
Brother Greg, you think about what he did then? This is one man against possibly 40, 50, 100 people there.
Right.
Okay. They had to recognize there was some power in him to back down.
That's one of the things they said. First off, is this man spoke with authority.
He's the king.
But he did have lots of supporters. I mean, they hailed him. The people were crying out. They wanted the people to stop doing it. But so what did they have to do? They have to kind of sneak around with subterfuge. Pilate was on Jesus' side. He never thought that they would pick Jesus Barabbas to let go. He thought for sure they'd want to crucify him, but follow the money. They were more afraid of losing the money than having Jesus Barabbas, a zealot who had sworn their death, free. And that's what it's money, power, greed. He was a king. That was written on ebony wood and plaster. I already told you about John the Baptist. This is the word Corban written on a stone. It's written backwards. If you read Hebrew, you can probably make it out, but I don't know if I should tell you all about the olives. Here, this is an interesting point. That's a pipeline. It's carved. You fit the pieces together and you bring water into the city. It was actually carved at the time of Jesus Christ, and it was funded by money from the temple. And when they put it together and brought water in, there were riots in the streets. People were so upset that they had done this. Why? Because they got fresh water? That was a good idea. It was a good thing to have fresh water. But where did they get the money? They got it from the money that was set aside for Corbin, for their Social Security. They were pilfering the Social Security funds rather than have a separate fund just for the pipeline. And they were worried there wouldn't be any money left in their Social Security. And so they were riding, and so Pontius Pilate sends a bunch of soldiers down dressed as civilians, and at a single signal, they pull out their clubs and they beat people until some of them died in order to restore order. Beat the protesters. They were rioting, but the fact is Pilate actually regretted that later, but it's mentioned by Christ. But that's what he's talking about, because your Social Security is supposed to be each other. Not a common treasury. You're the precious pearls and gold nuggets of the kingdom. You are to invest in each other and be bound by love for one another. And you could do it. Just like the Oregon disaster team. They're doing what, on almost nothing, they're doing what FEMA couldn't do. And the fact is that people, and I believe people are waking up. I believe they are waking up all over this country. They're just not hearing this message. Golden calf. What was a golden calf? Golden calf, they took their rings off, they pounded it out, they made this statue, and they put it in the middle of the deal. And according to painters, they danced around in skimpy outfits. According to Hollywood, they were really skimpy outfits. But there's a golden statue, and that's in a temple. What was that doing there? There's a golden statue that was in Athens. What was that? That's called, actually not Athens, but it's similar to what was in Athens. I didn't get a picture of the one that was in Athens, but the one in Athens was called the Reserve Fund. That's what they called it, the Reserve Fund. They actually sawed off pieces of it from time to time when they needed extra money. That's the bank. They didn't have a vault. So, you know, if they find somebody sawing the horn off the golden calf, he's robbing the bank. Now, why put all the money in the bank? You can't even spend it like that. Well, that's good. You can't spend it. But if you leave town, say Amalekites, Malachites are coming over the hill, and you say, oh my gosh, there's a lot of them, and they got all these sharp things, and I'm leaving out of here. You got your gold in your pocket and your silver in your pocket, and you're leaving. But you didn't have your gold in the pockets and the darn golden calf, and you're walking around with scarabs as money. Useless paper, clay, coins. So you have to stay to be loyal to the gold, because that's your wealth. Moses says, no, don't bind yourselves together with central banks. Bind yourself together with love for one another. That's what you have to do. It's a little harder. It takes more time. You got to spend, you know, that temple at Ephesus. The apostles were accused of robbing the temple at Ephesus. Built by 127 different countries, sat over 20,000 people who were stockholders in the temple at Ephesus, minted coin, had that most secure vault in all of the Mediterranean, and was the underwriter for the system of Corban for every single country in the Pax Romana. And the apostles were accused of robbing it? Were they in there breaking into the vault? They were pulling members away. It was going bankrupt anyway. They were actually, I'll tell you a lot more about it in some of the books, but the point is this was the World Bank. And the Christians were accused of robbing it. Now, who was becoming Christians? Well, there were poor people becoming Christians, but also the most industrious, self-starting, hardworking people were becoming Christians. And all the people living on welfare, 75% of the people in my county get a government check every month. Over 50% of the people in Oregon get a government check every month. Wow. You know, some of those are actually employees of the government. A guy at the Forest Service told me once, yeah, I work for the government. I said, no, you don't. I used to work for the Forest Service. Nobody works for it, the government. They got a job. But they don't work. And I was just teasing them. I knew them for years. But... And I was standing around and I pointed out that 75% of the people in this county get a government check every month. And there was a bunch of guys standing around that I knew in Paisley. And they said, oh my gosh, really? I said, yeah, it's actually a little higher than that, but it's about 75%. And he says, that's terrible, that's terrible. And I says, wait a minute. Your wife works for the school. Your wife works for the Forest Service. I says, you guys get a government check every month. I says, I'm the only one standing here who doesn't get a government check every month. And they go, oh, that's right. So, anyway, there's another temple. You know what temple that is? Well, it's actually U.S. Treasury, I think. But it's there. That's a temple, too, the Federal Reserve. Why were Christians persecuted under Marcus Aurelius? Marcus Aurelius was considered the golden age of Rome, one of the best emperors in all of Rome. You read his Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, he sounds like a Presbyterian minister. Talks about responsibility and loyalty and all these wonderful traits. But he persecuted Christians more than any other emperor officially. more than Trajan, more than Hadrian. Actually, those guys said, leave the Christians alone. Why did he do it? He passed a law that you had to register your children at birth within 30 days.
The Christians were diminishing the authority of Rome.
They were Ethiopians, not participating, and it scared him to death.
Yeah.
They were peaceful, but it scared him.
Same to death.
Yeah. Because they weren't, they would not register their children because where did you register them? At a government building called the Temple of Saturn. That's what these temples were. They were government buildings. That was the Bureau of Vital Statistics. Why did they want to register them? Well, they were borrowing money against them. But the other reason is because they wouldn't know when to give you benefits. They had to know how old you were. Who were your parents? Were you eligible for the benefits? I got more pamphlets out there. Called No Man Father would be a very interesting pamphlet to you read if you want to know more about that. All that's free on online. Jesus said, call no man on earth father, but my father. He said, pray to your father who art in heaven. At that time, anybody in that crowd knew exactly what he was talking about. Nobody in these crowds today knows what he's talking about because your ministers aren't telling you. If you address a senator of Rome, you addressed him Patri Cicero, Father Cicero. If you addressed the emperor, it was Patronus, our father, who art in Rome. That's what they're talking about. Call no man father. You're not supposed to be getting your benefits and your daily bread from those guys. Those are the guys who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. They only give you what they take away from your neighbor. Didn't start that way, but that's the way it ended up. Augustus Caesar financed half the welfare in Rome out of his own personal pocket at first. Later on, it was time to contribute. That destroys society. People say, oh, welfare costs so much. These people are taking so much money on welfare. That's so terrible. I mean, it's costing me all this money in taxes. That's not the problem. The problem is it costs you in integrity. It costs you in your soul and in your spirit. Because you're not thinking about your neighbor as much as you're thinking about yourself. People say, how do I get out? Don't ask how you can get out. Ask how you can get your neighbor out. You can get your neighbor out by starting to love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, it's easy to sit in a pew and say, yeah, I love you. I love you. I love you. But don't call me tomorrow because I'm busy. Love is an action word. Faith is an action word. Belief is an action word. You can't do enough to earn salvation. That's a modius. That's a measurement of modius. It's actually a lot bigger than that. This is not to scale. It would hold about 30 pounds of wheat. At the time of Jesus Christ, it cost 6 denarii. They would be normally about the size of a dime. By Diocletian, it cost 120,000 denarii. I couldn't find a stack of coins that was 120,000. That's not nowhere near 120,000. It would cost you 120,000 denarii for the same sack of wheat. Why? No more silver in the denarii. They were more than clipping. They actually made iron coin. Yeah, and like ironclad coin that you have in your pocket. Sorry, not your pocket. People say, oh, silver and gold, we're going to cast that in the streets. Prophecy says we're going to cast all our silver and gold away. I said, you got silver and gold in your pocket? No. I says, I guess you threw yours away already. The Bible says just weights and measures. This is the result of not having just weights and measures. We don't even have clad coin in our pocket half the time. We have credit cards. Somebody asked me in, where was I? Omaha. And he said, what about capitalism? I said, well, we haven't capitalism in this country since 1913. They almost stood up and applauded. They were applauding. We have debtism. This country was the greatest country in the world, but it's been doing a lot of stuff that ain't so great. You're not going to turn it around overnight. Most of what you're going to learn during hard times, just like the Israelites in Egypt. It's an on-the-job training. But it's got to start somewhere. The longest journey starts with the first step. And that step should be towards the kingdom. That's the book, Higher Liberty. Any of these books, I bring them because people want hard copies of the books. But basically, you can download all these free on the net. You can download all the audios. I don't even know how many audios they have on the net by now. They're making me record this. That's probably going to end up on the net if I did it right. I never push the buttons right all the time, but they got about 25 buttons I got to push to do this. But higher liberty is in response to Romans 13. Let every man remain subject to the higher power. You look up the word exousia, even in the regular concordance, it means the right to choose. It's translated liberty in Corinthians. It's translated right in several other deals, but there they translate it power in Romans 13. That's okay. Look up the definitions of power. It's not electrical power. What kind of power is it? It's definition number 6 in an unabridged dictionary, the right to choose. If you look up, if you ask Aristotle, if you ask other philosophers of the time, people who spoke Koine Greek, what that word meant, they'll tell you it is the strongest word in the Greek language for liberty. It supersedes eleutheria, which is the other word. It is, let's just put it in context. Let's put the word liberty there like it's in Corinthians. Let every man remain subject to the higher liberty. The word higher there actually means original. Let every man remain subject to the higher right to choose, the higher liberty, because all liberty is of God. There is no liberty but of God, and anyone who opposes liberty opposes God. That's what it says. The right to choose. Who gave you the right to choose? That you are endowed by your Creator with the right to choose. Unless you contracted away by making covenants. Or applying for benefits. Or accepting benefits. If we were doing what the church was doing in the first century, nobody would have applied to the government for benefits. Nobody would even look. They'd say, well, why do we want to join that program? We'd go to church. But suddenly church got distracted. Apathy comes from affluence. What was the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah? In a time of affluence, they did not strengthen the poor. In the time of affluence, we have weakened the Christian by saying it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods through the agency of government. This is kind of a hard message. You know, I've been in big, big churches, but I've never been in big, big churches twice.
What can you expound on how we are coveting our neighbor's goods and that aspect of things?
Well, you know, recently we've seen, with Obama, and I don't want to pick on Obama. He's a victim of our sloth. He wouldn't even exist except for we haven't been doing what Christ said, what God said, what Moses said. The fact is, people, they've all seen it. You know, he's talking about these, you know, free health care and everything, and we call it redistribution of wealth. Yeah, he's giving my money away. I mean, it's not a complicated mechanics. He's not taking money out of his pocket. He's taking money out of your pocket and out of your neighbor's pocket and your neighbor's neighbor's pocket. And then he will give that to you. That's a sin by the Ten Commandments. Jesus says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. He didn't do away with the Ten Commandments. God hasn't changed. And evidently we haven't changed. Because we keep doing it. That's Cecil B. DeMille's at the beginning of the movie Moses. I remember that when I was a little kid. And what did he say in that speech? He said, are men the property of the state? Or are they free souls under God? This battle continues throughout the world today. This is not a new battle. We've just been asleep.
To get Larry was asking, I had a specific example. I used to have employees, and one of them was really sloth. They'd catch them disobeying direct orders and just sitting back with his arms behind his head, not doing accounting and messing up my book thoroughly. I fired him. Well, he applies for unemployment immediately, the same day I fired. And I had a really tough time talking to my pastor and explaining to him that this is theft. Every penny that he got from unemployment had to be replenished by my increases in unemployment insurance payments. But my pastor wouldn't hear it. Oh, it's a tax, or it's insurance. This is what these things are for.
Right. That's what they're for. If you look up the word employee in Clark's Summary of U.S. American Law, which you heard me mention earlier, you look it up in the index, it says, see master servant. All employee laws were laws in Rome to protect the slaves of Rome from people dumping them out on the streets when they were done with them. And of course, so they passed laws that you can't just dump them out. He's your slave. He's your responsibility. Yeah, I told somebody earlier, it was you. I said, if before I'll hire anybody, my wife's got to give birth to him first. You know, that's because I'm not getting into that master-slave relationship where there's people going around saying I don't have to pay income tax because there's no law that says I have to pay income tax. They call it the 861 argument. Well, the fact is, there was another, Russo had a thing coming out. Remember that was called?
Freedom to Fascism.
Freedom to Fascism. And, you know, I love those guys because I love everybody, but the fact is they're wrong. You pay income tax because you signed up for Social Security. That's when wages and salaries became liable to income tax. When you signed up. And you signed up because you were a 14th Amendment citizen and they gave you that opportunity of signing up. And so therefore you have to pay a Social Security tax which guarantees no benefits, and you have to pay income tax. And we go through it in employee versus enslaved.
What about now though, where they condition people to believe that you don't sign up anymore, your children are toe-tagged?
Right. Well, I got second generation, and my family's never had a Social Security number.
But do you understand?
Yeah, I understand that. Well, the thing is, they toe tag. I got the pamphlet out there called No Man Father. I got the employee versus slave. And did you expect the Pharaoh to be nice? Okay. Okay.
No, I understand.
Okay, I agree.
I mean,
it's a catch 22. But the point is, what I'm saying is that they say only federal employees are liable for income tax. This is the conclusion by lawyers who go and study those statutes, and they're absolutely true. Only federal employees are liable for income tax. But how many people have a federal employee identification number? You got one. That's what it's called.
Okay, so this is the thing. What we should be doing when our children are toe-tagged is saying, wait a minute, you're breaking your own legal parameters that you've established. One of them being forced child labor.
Right.
Because you've just made this child who's not eligible.
Well, actually, you can actually, if you, there is a form to fill out within, I think it has to be within 5 days, but it might be within 30 days. As long as the child has not used the number, you can have it rescinded. It doesn't go away, but it's rescinded.
Yeah,
and again, you read Call No Man Father, you actually have to start accepting benefits. And if you build the right network and you get the right people, you will have places to go to have birth to your child. My children were all born in hospitals.
No, I know.
It's a big problem. But the point is that it's about, you're a federal employee. My father, I asked him when I was 9 years old. This is one of the Kodak moments. I said, Dad, who do you work for? He said, until July 1st, I work for the federal government.
Yeah. 6 months.
Because he was in a 50% income tax bracket. He says, until July 1st, I work for the federal government. After that, I work for myself. You work for McDonald's? For the first 2-3 hours of the day, you're flipping them burgers for the federal government. Everything, every value of every ounce of sweat you give off will be gathered up by somebody with a federal employer identification number and sent to the federal government. You're in a Corby system of statutory labor. Welcome to Egypt. Welcome to Babylon. Welcome to Rome. Now, that's where you're at, but there's a solution. And that's to start seeking the kingdom. Seeking it. Not jumping into the kingdom, but seeking the kingdom. Start turning around. Start learning what it means to take care of yourselves as a free society. And it doesn't have to be big. It can be really little. The first job they did at Lowe's Hill was they helped somebody move. And they saved money by helping them move. And they had fun. And they got to know each other better. And they got to trust who showed up on moving day. That's your Minutemen. Who didn't show up? That's your Wait a Minute Men. That's telling you who you can trust. Now you give them another chance, but you start building that trust and you start learning. You start looking in another direction to solve your problems. We got to do baby steps here, but you'll get your chance to run for it. But you got to run together. You got to learn how to stand alone as individuals, together. Bound together by an unbreakable bond of invisible love. Now, the legal aspects of creating a congregation of record, what we call a congregation of record, is just amazing. When we took this to the attorneys, I was telling this, this is rabbit trails. I talk in rabbit trails all the time. But I always come back. Rabbits go in circles. They always come back to the hole. And there I was talking, presenting the free church report to these attorneys. And they had an extra attorney in there. Evidently, they'd been passing them out around to all these other attorneys because they were so excited about the book. And the one attorney, I won't say who he is, but he leaned over to me and he says, last week, we had 14 people in this office trying to figure out how to withdraw consent. And then you brought us this book, which is the Free Church Report. It's not about withdrawing consent. It's about getting the Egypt out of your own hearts. Preparing. You're in the unrighteous mammon. Mammon is the Aramaic word, unquestionably, for entrusted wealth. That's what mammon is. Federal Reserve created the largest trust in the history of the world. That's what Charles A. Lindbergh said it would do. And he left the country after they passed it because he said it was the end of America. Social Security Act added more to the trust. Your labor, your son's labor, your son's son's labor, your daughter's everything forever. Unless something changes things. Well, something's going to change because shift happens. But this trust is the mammon, but it's unrighteous because it takes away from your neighbor to provide you with the benefits. It's done by force, not by free will offerings. It's legal, but it's not God's design. And so therefore, you will be made in a new image of a selfish people who care not for their neighbor and really don't care for God. But they will have a form of godliness in their churches, but they will deny the power thereof. And they will go into bondage, and in the day of reckoning, they will cry out to God, but he won't hear them. But you are hearing something, or you wouldn't have. I haven't seen anybody light a match yet. Set me on fire. There's a few serious faces around, but the fact is, you know, I have to say this. And all I'm doing is speaking to you. You will not find me forcing you to contribute to your neighbor's good.
How do you answer people who say, well, I've paid into this all these years. I deserve what I'm getting.
Okay. It's really simple. It's a Corbin system. The Corbin system is you cast your bread upon the waters. You take care of the widows and orphans and needy while you're working. You help out those people in your community that need help. And you give that help freely so that they will be taken care of. And you've all done that. You've all paid in to help those people out. And now your neighbor, your children, and your children's children should pay in to help you out. But are you going to force them at the point of a gun? Or are you going to allow them the opportunity to be charitable too? Now, I'm not telling anybody they can't collect Social Security. You did pay into it. Be friends with the unrighteous mammon. That's what he's talking about. Be friends with the unrighteous mammon. So that when it fails, not if it fails, when it fails, you will be more suitable for, or be suitable for more righteous habitations. Where's that righteous habitation? kingdom of God, which is at hand. We were to preach it's at hand. We weren't to preach it's coming in 2,000 years. It's at hand. It's going to become greater and greater, just as Rome has become greater. Rome is only about an eighth of the world at that time. Now we're dealing with the similitude of Rome. You can read Rome versus Us. It's over there. Anybody can take one for free, and they'll tell you all about it. We talk about republics, democracies, kingdoms. Okay. Let's run through. We hit a lot of this stuff. Anybody recognize that painting? Capitol Dome. That's the painting in the Capitol Dome. It's called the Apotheos. Apotheos. When Caesar, that's George Washington right there. If you go on the U.S. government website talking about this painting, talking about the painting in the Capitol Dome, they tell you that this painting, quote, I'm quoting here, this painting raises Washington to the rank of God. That's what it says on the U.S. government website. I went back and checked it again and again, and it still says it there years later. When Caesar came into Rome, there was a civil war. He came into Rome. He was called the Savior of Rome. The Senate elected him Imperator. You look in Collins' Latin Dictionary, Imperator means commander-in-chief. He also asked for another office to be created that he could hold. Commander-in-chief is a 10-year term of office. You had to take oath of office. You had to be elected to it by the Electoral College of the Senate every 10 years. He was elected 3 times. The other office was Principas Civitas, first citizen, president of Rome. His wife is known as Principas Femina, first lady. That was as the chief executive officer, he was... had many of the same duties as the executive officer of the United States. But he asked for a third office, Apotheos. That translates in the Greek into originator of gods, appointer of gods. He wanted to be the appointer of gods throughout the empire. There's another guy who was an appointer of gods. All the gods were the magistrates, the judges, in the imperial courts that decided imperial matters. You look it up in your Strong's Concordance. The word theos is defined as ruling judge, magistrates. It says magistrates. If you went into a Greek court, you would address the judge as theos. We're led to believe that when you say God, you mean God. There are gods many, Paul says. With the day, remember the day he got his hair cut on the tarmac and everybody complained about he holding up Air Force One to get his hair cut and it cost so much money to the taxpayers and everybody was all watching that on the news and going, oh my goodness, what a waster of tax money. He fired every judge in the United States and hired back the ones he wanted. That didn't get in the news, just the haircut. Isn't that amazing how that happens? When you see these ridiculous stories in the news, you better find out what's going on.
Are you basically saying that when you vote for a president, you're virtually voting for a new god?
It's the voice of the people picking.
Repeat what I said so I
can hear. This troublemaker down here has asked, are you saying that when you're voting for a different god? I didn't say that. Did I say that?
For a God.
You're voting for the appointer of gods, the appointer of judges. Look, this system is what it is. It is designed after Rome. But remember, God so loved the world. What world? Which word would they use in that phrase? Cosmos. He said he loved Rome. He loved the people of Rome, not the evil they did. He loved Cain, but he would not strive with them forever. He loved Rome. Rome was great. They were lawful. They were great people, but they were getting worse and worse and worse. They formed Rome originally 500 years before Christ after the pattern of Israel, which had gone into apostasy. They threw out the Tarquinian kings and formed a society based on faith, hope, and charity.
I'll show you how much he loved Rome. You know where it said he commanded them to go into all the world?
Right.
Now that word world is not cosmos.
Right.
It is a word for Roman Empire.
Right. Well, all inhabited places.
Yeah, all inhabited, but it was the inhabited. Yeah.
From the Roman point of view, it would have been the Roman Empire. But in truth, I believe from Jesus' point of view, it included the Teutons and all those others.
It's illustrated because that's where they went. They didn't go to India or China or South Africa. They went to the
basically the Roman Empire, but they did go up to Ireland and stuff. Yeah, not those particular apostles. There were actually missionaries coming from Ireland before Peter was supposedly to get to Rome. Because there were so many people in Jerusalem. They had heard about Jesus all over the Roman Empire. They had heard about Jesus. They were packing them in. This was the biggest event ever. Good thing they had the aqueduct built. But anyway, there's where the gods many. There's gods many.
Yeah, they think they are.
Well, that's what it says. It says there are gods many. Then they actually refer to them as thinking they are gods. So, but they are gods if you elect them, if you choose them, and the president chooses them, or the Congress does and approves them. But anyway, that I'm not condemning the system. I'm saying if you go to this system, you will go to the ways of the corruption of Rome. Rome had no divorce, no orphans, no unemployment, almost no alcoholism. It had an all-volunteer army. It had just weights and measures. It had a people that had a sense of justice about everything they did, and they rose to power until, in a time of affluence, they began to weaken themselves and became corrupt and corrupt and corrupt and corrupt until you get to the Roman Empire that began 500 years after it was originally a republic. In Higher Liberty, I talk about Libera res publica, that's what Rome was called, free from things public. But Tacitus writes, by the time the emperors came, they referred to it as res publica, things public. Because the libera res publica only lives in the imagination of men, which can never be. Well, it can be. It's called the kingdom of God, where men are free from things public because they are governing themselves in righteousness. It's not just seek the kingdom. And seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness. It is not righteous to desire your neighbor's wealth. I mean, it's stealing to take it. But if you desire it, you could coerce him into a contract where he has to give up his wealth for your benefit. You want those to be free will offerings. You're not creating the right kinds of bonds. Jesus says, ye also are gods. Is it not written that ye also are gods? How do they deal with that? He doesn't mean divine gods, although we're made in the image of God. That's a 12-man jury. 12 angry men, for those of you who haven't recognized it. They decide fact and law. You go into these courts today, you don't get to decide fact and law. And I wish I had the book written on that. But anyway, we're going late. So everybody's brain is captured by ideas. Your mind is imprisoned by ideas, and I can't let you out. But I can rattle the bars. But if you want out, Christ is the key. He has the way to the door, and it has to be Christ in you. You can't live like I'm talking about. You can't be in that Libera Res Publica unless Christ is in you. You have to have Christ in you. And Christ won't dwell in you unless you love what Christ was, what he was doing, what he was saying. You have to be willing to sacrifice yourself as Christ loved the church. Let's get that horrible thing off. So anyway, we're kind of in. I don't want anybody to do anything out of fear, but, you know, I haven't been just writing about law and Bible and history. God had also showed me things about the sun many years ago, and Jesus said, look for signs in the sun. All this happened at the time of the Roman Empire. Tiberius saw auroras so bright you could read print at night in Rome by the light of the aurora alone. He thought the whole north woods was on fire and actually sent a legion up to help put the fires out. He didn't know what that aurora was, but Jesus said, look for signs in the sun, because Jesus knew what that was. It was the sun blowing off coronal mass ejections, EMPs like you have never seen before. And they can knock out all power. Now, if you're all living in tents, bunch of Indians, no big deal. If you're living in Vesuvius, it'd be a big deal because this also causes volcanic eruptions. It sends a huge amount of energy to the earth. We have magnetic shields that absorbs that energy, but then the energy passes into the poles, and it protects us, but it heats up the core. And you see, there were three volcanoes went off at the same time that CME hit and triggered the volcano, the earthquake in Japan. There's a CME hit in Jupiter. There's an actual comets going by the sun. They're actually quite a ways away, and they cause a CME to go off when they come near because comets are heavily charged bodies. If you ever go on the internet, go look up Thunderbolt. They'll tell you how the universe really works. Thunderbolt.com. I'm going real fast. CME hit Saturn, and that's the gases heating up as that energy enters into the center core. You can see up even up on the top. These were all back last solar max. Last solar max, every 11 years, is a solar max where there's a lot of this activity. It's been going on this way for a long time, but it's been steadily increasing over the last 50 years. Every other solar max, the outside planets are hit more often. Every other solar max, the interior planets are hit more often. It's our turn this time. Solar max is 2012, 2013. And there's a comet passing between us and the sun on October 17th of this year. It may cause some CMEs. I don't expect mega flares yet. I think we got a little bit more time, but we don't have any time to waste. Maybe we'll get through this solar max and nothing will happen. But look at the economy. Look at the moral state. I'm not interested in frightening you, but this country can't live without power. All kinds of things could happen. This was actually a picture of a volcano that went off back on October 17th, 1998, when that happened to be Day of Atonement, and there's a long story around it. But I published an article that something was going to happen on that day, and we were hit by a CME that caused volcanoes to go off in Africa and Italy and all over the place. And that's when I realized that this direct connection between the earth and the sun. And there's other guys that have been doing that too. So basically, that's kind of it. You got more questions? I don't want to keep you out of, we're probably running out of time here, but what? Go ahead. Yeah, LNN will be at 0.6 astronomical units between. I don't know that anything's going to happen. I'm just saying that creates a window. There are things, you know, full moons create a window for earthquakes. You're more likely to have an earthquake in a full moon because there's more stress, more likely to trigger events. You could have events triggered all kinds of ways. This was only an X1 class flare that hit that caused this earthquake. But there's several things going on here. The core is heating up. There's 24 earth volcanoes going off under the sea. All the fishes have been changing their routes for the last 15 years all over the ocean. There are shipping routes that have been altered because ocean areas in the ocean that didn't used to are now boiling on a regular basis. So there are changes shifting, happening all the time. They're not going to tell you about it on CNN. Government knows it. I have people that are high up in government. They're high up in emergency, have all the FEMA codes. And there's a huge deal this May. FEMA's got a huge exercise preparing for disaster. The problem is they're not going to handle it. And even if they could, they won't do a good job. People have to start coming together. What you'll see starts and stops. Things will happen and jerk you around. You could go show this stuff. I could show you videos of this and stuff and what's going to happen. It'd scare a lot of people, but you don't want to be gathering with all kinds of people that jump to fear. We're not talking about fear. We're talking about loving one another. We're talking about every one of us becoming the Faith Emergency Management Auxiliary. And that's what all the churches should be. And there are people in every one of these churches that would get this. And they will wake up to it when they see the need. But right now, for some reason, some of you are waking up right now. You feel it in your hearts. You hear it in your souls. God's calling to you. Whatever God gives you, you have to act upon so that He will give you more. If you do nothing with the talent He gives you, He will take it away from you and give it to somebody else. If He awakens you to the fact that you need to do something, you need to do it. It's in spirit and truth. And for some reason or other, the apathy in the churches today, I'm saved. Jesus is coming. He's going to do it. He's going to come and find out you're not doing it. And He's going to say, get ye from me, you workers of iniquity. Because you haven't been loving your neighbor. You've been disregarding the commandments. You've been coveting your neighbor's goods to the agency of men who exercise authority. And I told you, you weren't to be that way. I told you to attend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, and mercy, and faith. Injustice is happening every day, and nobody's doing anything about it. We're expecting, well, we're going to complain about Obama because somebody's not doing anything about it. We're not doing anything about it. Why don't we take care of that guy? Why don't we get people together and go into his church and scold his pastor for not taking care of that family? And go into the church and just speak out. I had some guys that would just walk right in there, and they just blurted right out. Tell them, you hypocrites. Jesus did that. You know, I mean, I don't want to pick it. I mean, they're ignorant. They don't know. But we have to get this message out in a very strong way. Well, and I'm really a nice guy. I'm not a bad guy.
Aren't the churches, the 501(c) churches, are really under the arm of the government anyway. So their hands are tied.
Well, their hands aren't complete. You can still be charitable. But 501(c)(3) churches can't go around and say what I say. They are gagged. And that's another whole subject. Body of Christ versus body of state. Last chapter of the Covenants of the Gods will tell you why a church should not be seeking to be under 501(c)(3. Why a church should not incorporate. Why a church should not file a 1023 and does not have to. It says on the form. Churches do not have to file this form. But every one of these churches out here did it. What is going on? It's a collective unconsciousness. You don't have to pay taxes anyway. You're automatically considered exempt even if you do not file the form. That's a direct quote out of 1828 of the IRS codes. You're automatically considered exempt.
Jay Sekulow brought this up on his radio program. As quick as it came out of his mouth, he diverted the subject because he knew he messed up. Knew he made the mistake.
Well, you get me on that radio program. I know who Sekulow is.
Yeah, and once he said it,
yeah, it's a taboo. When I went to these attorneys, Herbert Titus, Bob Olson, libertysomething.com, but if you look up Herbert Titus, you'll find it. Bob Olson turns to me and says, I can't figure out why these churches aren't seeing this. It's right in the law. Churches are mandatorily excepted from having to file 508(c)(1). Churches don't have to file. Why? Because the churches are another government, one form of government. Established by Jesus Christ. If you incorporate the law states, if you incorporate under the acts and laws of the state of whatever, all other previous incorporations are null and void as if they never happened. You are no longer the corpus of Christ by law. You are the corpus of the state. That's what they say. They tell you that. It's in the law books. It's not a secret. I'm not revealing anything. I am revealing it, but only to those who haven't taken the time to listen and learn. And this is why they don't like me. Because I will say this on the radio. I'll say it. You know, I'll scream it anywhere you want me to scream it. But they don't like it. I can't help it. Yeah, but the fact is I'm not saying disobey the law. I'm saying obey the law. Black's Law Dictionary, the church is a government. I have to have government ID to fly, right? I don't have a Social Security number because they have excluded me because I organized the church in accordance with Christ. They have a law already on the books, if you know where to look. We tell you in the Free Church Report that I am excluded from Social Security. I cannot use a number. You cannot get a driver's license. You cannot get a business license. You cannot get a marriage license in the United States of America if you don't show a Social Security number for benefit purposes. I can't do it. I would be a violation of the law if I did it, a conflict of law, because of their laws and the way in which we organized the church. And we wanted to make sure this was legal, so we went to the top legal minds in the United States and said, this is what we're doing. And they said it's legal, but they said, you're going to need ID. You're going to need to make church ID. They said this in the bathroom. They didn't want to say it in the office. But I'm saying it, and I got my cell phone on. But the fact is we went and made ID. I have ID. I fly with it. All of us fly with it. I've never been searched. Never been searched. Fly into Washington, D.C. with church ID. They say you have to have government ID. I said, that is government ID. You know, I had another guy who quite doesn't walk in the Spirit as much as I pray that I do. And he showed the same ID in L.A. airport. And the guy was looking at it, looking at it, looking at it. I knew, oh my gosh, he's going to say no. So I walked up, and the guy had the ID in his hand. And I walked up, and I slid my ID in front of the other ID so he could see mine instead of his. Same ID. Came off the same machine. He looked at my ID, and he said, oh, okay. You don't need to see our ID. We're not the ones you're looking for. Now, did everybody get that? Anybody not get that? It's Star Wars. Or no, it's Star Wars. Yeah, it's Star Wars. You can go on your way, you know. But the fact is that this is a walk of faith. I can't guarantee that they're always going to recognize that. But, that's the only ID we can get. And it's verifiable online. It's based on higher standards than they use. All the guys that were supposedly in that plane flying into the buildings, they all had government ID. That wasn't the problem. They all had government ID.
Do you drive or travel? Do you have driver's license?
I have an operator's license issued by the church to operate church vehicles, and it's good operating other vehicles too. It's the only one I can get. I've gone to the state of Oregon. They say I can't. They will. I am not subject to getting their license. I can't get their license. Title 42, Section 666 of the United States Code. That's it. I'm not kidding you. Section 666 of the United States Code says if you don't have a Social Security number, you can't get a license in any state for anything.
Because it's a benefit.
It's a benefit. They have moved it to a benefit. And we presented this to them, and they said, that's right. Go get licensed somewhere else. So I went to God's government. And that's absolutely legal. We were advised to do this by attorneys, not our attorneys. Church has no attorneys. We're not the client of attorneys. And they would, that's another whole half-hour lecture, or I could make it an hour and a half if you want. But there's a lot to this. We're making lots of jumps, and I know this is there's some disagreement in here. There's some confusion in here, and I would be glad to fill in the gaps, but we have done our homework. We are not disobeying the law. We don't believe in that. We tell people, stop doing it. Don't disobey the law. But we are the ones that do contrary to the decrees of Caesar, because there is another king, one Jesus. He established a government. It's not the wholeness of the government. There's going to be more. It's an infinite journey. There's layers to the. In my Father's house, there are many mansions. You know, when Israel was freed from Egypt, they were Israel, but they weren't in the promised land yet. They had more to learn. Then when they're in the promised land, they were supposed to learn more. And they actually been forgetting what they learned. And there's no end to the levels of the kingdom of God. And we should be healing people left and right. We've seen instantaneous healings. But it's not us. God's showing us that if we walk in this way, these things and greater things than these we should do, and you will need those powers again. Why don't we have those powers anymore? I remember shouldn't say saint, Thomas Aquinas came in and saw the Pope counting gold coins. And the Pope says, "No longer can the church say, 'Silver and gold have I none.'" And Thomas's response was, "No longer either can the church say, 'Arise and walk.'" The church has lost sight of its mission. It has been seduced away by the seducer of seducers to do something contrary to the King, Jesus. They said it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods. It's okay to take away the liberty of your neighbor. Jesus said, Romans 13, that higher liberty. At Romans 13, that's what they always come back. But Romans 13 says to obey the government. It says, remain subject to the higher original power. Original power all came from God. God did not endow government with the power to be the government. You did by making covenants. What was it? "Thou shalt make no covenants with them nor with their gods." They're not talking statues. They're talking judges, rulers who can exercise authority one over the other. Because it is not to be that way with you if you are to be the children of God. You can't be the children of God and the children of gods at the same time. That's one thing. You can only have one father. Now, it's up to you to figure out where you want to go, which direction you want to go. And if you want to go where we're going, we'll do everything we can to help you. There's a lot to it. We have bank accounts without Social Security numbers, EINs, TINs, because we can't get those things because you cannot apply for a TIN unless you have a filing requirement. And we are excluded, mandatorily excluded, from filing unless we become a corporation of the state. We can't file. We're not allowed to. We're not doing contrary to the decrees of Caesar in that aspect. We're doing according to the decrees of Caesar. But we're doing it by coincidence because the government understands what the church is better than the church. The best definition for the church I've seen anywhere is in the Law of Black's dictionary. That's terrible. How come they know it better than we do? That we're supposed to be propagating his doctrines of loving one another, not taking from one another by somebody who can exercise authority. We were building a clinic out there north of us, and I was freely giving my time, drawing the plans, helping them lay out everything. And then somebody came in and said, "Of course we have to put this on the tax rolls." And I said, "You put this on the tax rolls and I'm going out of here." And he says, "Why is that? It has to be. How are we going to get the money?" And he says, "We could get the money by free will offerings, or you could get a gun and force people to give you the money." He says, "Well, I wouldn't do that." I says, "Well, what do you think the government's going to do? They're not going to go out and say, 'Would you give us some money for the clinic?' You're going to pay them, or they're going to take your house away. They're going to take widows' houses. How many widows do you think lose their home every year in the United States? You got any idea? You know about inheritance tax? Nothing robs the widows and orphans more than inheritance tax. How many women have had to sell their homes to pay inheritance tax?
Or IRS.
Yeah. Property tax is usury. Early American, Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys, they were establishing 10-year title in land. This is what the Pilgrims came here, to own land that could not be taxed. To own that land in the lodial, fee simple title that could not be taxed. Only 30% of Americans did that. But those are the ones who were fighting the American Revolution. 50,000 Americans joined the British. It was only the people that were struggling to actually own land so that they would own the milk and honey of that land. Legal title. It goes to this in Law versus Legal, one of the chapters of Covenants of the Gods. Legal title. This is a direct quote. Legal title is an apparent title that carries with it no beneficial interest. You pay $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 for your home. You got legal title. You don't own the beneficial interest of that home. It doesn't include it. Beneficial interest, defined, the right to use the property. You bought it, but you don't have the right to use it. You want to use it, you got to pay the use tax. You stop paying the use tax for 2-3 years, depending on what state you're in, they're going to take the whole property away from you. Because you didn't pay rent. Huh? Well, they don't even need eminent domain. They can enforce eminent domain on you, too. But you just didn't pay. Say again.
When you've registered it or put it on the roll, you've given it over.
Right.
To owner.
Right. And once somebody...
Not only not paying the taxes, if they decide, well, now you have to get a permit to drill a well.
Right.
Build
a house.
Build a building.
Put up a tent.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have to have a permit to put up a tent.
This is what motor vehicle code is.
Yeah. They're just regulating their property.
Right. These are the bylaws to the contract. Right. And once you register,
The definition of legal title goes on to an antithesis of equitable title. And you look up equitable title, the one who the law considers to be the true owner of the property, and it goes on to say that all property held legally in the United States is by government suffrage. You are not in the promised land. You don't have the right to the milk and honey, and we got to come to an end.
Thank you.
Okay.